Do you want more true crime bedtime stories? Sign up to Bonus Bedtime Stories on Apple Podcasts today to access early and ad-free episodes. Subscribers will also get an exclusive bonus episode each month. But for now, get comfortable and enjoy tonight's episode. Welcome to True Crime Bedtime Stories. In today's episode, we'll cover the perplexing case of Mitchell Weiser and Bonnie Bickwitt, two Brooklyn teenagers whose disappearance in 1973 has haunted families, friends, and investigators for decades. Imagine the scene, the summer of 73 with the smell of adventure in the air and music festivals drawing crowds by the thousands, a time when hitchhiking was as common as catching a bus. Mitchell and Bonnie were set to experience the concert of a lifetime, the legendary summer jam at Watkins Glen. It promised to be an unforgettable event, but it turned into an unsolved mystery that would consume their loved ones for 50 long years. There were no smartphones or social media, just two young souls with a cardboard sign that read, Watkins Glen, standing at the precipice of an enigma.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
We are still unraveling to this day the twists and turns of a case that befuddles even the most seasoned investigators. Brooklyn, 1973, the vibrancy of youth and rock and roll running high. Michael Weiser and Bonnie Bickwitt, two teenagers with promising futures, find themselves entwined in the allure of a summer concert. Mitchell, 16, with the sort of contagious enthusiasm that could fill a room, nurtures a passion for photography and music, particularly the Grateful Dead. A bespectacled, sweet-faced boy, he has friends who see him as fearless and even a bit of a rebel. Bonnie, just a year younger at 15, is described as intelligent and strong-willed, with an affection for trending music like the Allman Brothers, marking her personality as a free spirit. Both of them are thriving students at the progressive John Dewey High School, where the seeds of a tender romance between them have taken root. With the epic summer jam concert on the horizon, the two young lovers hatched a plan. It's the type of plan that speaks to youthful spontaneity and adventure, but it also demonstrates a very different time. Yes, it's a time of innocence, in which a 16-year-old boy and his 15-year-old girlfriend think nothing of hitchhiking from town to town. And yet, it is also a time when young people their age were thinking seriously about settling down to marriage, jobs, and children. Both of their parents express concern and ask them not to go. But the two young music lovers convinced them they'd earned the trip and were mature enough to handle it. Mitchell had snagged a valuable job at a local photography studio, a position that reflected his aspirations. Bonnie, too, was working at Camp Well Met, a place familiar to her from past summers as a camper. She was a parent helper, a position that reflected her maturity. Against this backdrop, Mitchell boards a bus at the Port Authority Terminal in Manhattan, bound for Bonnie. Their plans solidify over a shared breakfast at the camp on that fateful July morning. This would be the last confirmed sighting of the pair. With little money in their pockets and a cardboard sign that said Watkins Glen, they left Camp Well Met and headed for the highway. Along with Mitchell and Bonnie, there was an ocean of 600,000 fans, all drawn to the same musical calling descended on the small hamlet of Watkins Glen that weekend. Although it was more than three times the anticipated number of concertgoers, there was not a single report of violence across the three-day event. And in that vast sea of faces, only Mitchell and Bonnie would become phantoms, vanishing without a trace. The tapestry of stories from Summer Jam is rich, yet within these tales, the threads of Mitchell and Bonnie abruptly end. Their story travels through the years as search efforts evolve, and their family's determination never wanes. Even now, the mystery that shrouds their fate refuses to be a quiet one as their loved ones and authorities alike search for new leads, yearning for some semblance of closure. It's the kind of story that sends a chill down your spine, and naturally, you'd expect an immediate and fervent search operation. However, what unfolds is a textbook example of mishandling by law enforcement that transforms what might have been a recoverable situation into an enduring mystery. The initial response by the police to Mitchell and Bonnie's disappearance was, to put it mildly, lackluster in an era when the term Amber Alert was not part of the public lexicon, when missing children's faces didn't grace milk cartons or social media feeds. The reaction of the authorities was not uncommon, but it was devastatingly counterproductive. Mitchell and Bonnie were not just any teenagers. They were two kids from Brooklyn with their whole lives ahead of them, and yet they were hastily labeled as runaways. This assumption by the police shuttered windows to vital clues, letting valuable investigation time slip away like sand through fingers. Each moment lost was an opportunity missed to find Mitchell and Bonnie. It's almost incomprehensible today to think of such a delay in response, but back then, it took an excruciating 2 weeks for any substantial search to begin. By that time, any trail the teens may have left had grown cold. The witness's memory is foggy and the momentum all but gone. This blatant dismissal of urgency was not without consequence. Reports tell of Mitchell's father being treated with derision by police officers when he pleaded for them to act, his concerns brushed aside by bureaucratic indifference. A letter from a family friend published in the Wall Street Journal even accused the police department of not alerting agencies across the state, a blunder described as resulting in the loss of valuable time. The families of Mitchell and Bonnie grappled with a reality in which their beloved children had vanished into thin air. Every parent's worst nightmare was unfolding before their eyes. Yet they were met with an official response that was underwhelming at best and insulting at worst. Imagine the heartache, the frustration, the desperation. They were left with no other choice but to take matters into their own hands. The families tirelessly distributed thousands of flyers, canvassing both Sullivan and Schuyler counties, pleaded in ads across underground newspapers, and offered rewards for any information that could lead to Mitchell and Bonnie. It was an all-hands-on-deck effort. Parents, friends, and even the extended community banded together in a collective mission to do what the police wouldn't, in order to try and find the missing teens. They braved the hardscape of a nation racked with social change, where hitchhiking was common and dozens of communal movements flourished. The families probed every possible lead, whether that meant tracking down hippie communes, investigating cults like the Moonies and the Children of God, or seeking the guidance of psychics. The latter, a desperate plea for even a shred of hope, provides a somber look into their shattered serenity. These were not just frantic searches for the families. It was climbing against an imposing wall of the unknown, fighting for answers, for closure. The merciless passage of time did no favors either. With each passing day, week, and month, The chances of Mitchell and Bonnie being found alive dwindled way down by the oppressive reality that time is the enemy in missing persons cases. And as each year ticked by, the light of hope dimmed more and more. The failure of law enforcement to provide prompt aid is more than just a critique of police practices in the 1970s. It's a painful chapter in these families' lives, etched with what-ifs and if-onlys. Eventually, the unsuccessful self-funded awareness campaign took its toll on both families. The funds ran out and the campaign had to be scaled back. Mitchell's parents moved away from Brooklyn for the sake of his father's health to the drier climate of Arizona. But they continued to pay $2.39 every month to keep their name and telephone number in the Brooklyn phone directory in case their son ever tried to contact them. And so they waited for decades. In July 2000, a true crime TV series called Missing Persons ran an episode on Mitchell and Bonnie. A psychic was featured on the program who claimed the teenagers had been murdered by a disturbed Vietnam veteran, perhaps by the name of Wayne, who was still alive at the time. That wasn't the most interesting lead to come out of the program. A viewer named Alan Smith called the tip hotline to say he had information about Mitchell and Bonnie. In fact, he said he knew what happened to them because he witnessed it. He said he'd met Mitchell and Bonnie on the road as they were hitchhiking home from the concert. He claimed the three of them had been picked up by a man not much older than them, and that at some point, as it was very hot, the four of them had decided to stop for a swim in the Susquehanna River. According to Alan Smith, tragedy struck during the swim. Bonnie got caught in a treacherous current, he said, and after Mitchell jumped in to save her, they were both carried away and drowned. When asked why he didn't call the police immediately, Smith said he was very stoned at the time and afraid of the police. The driver of the car dropped him off at a nearby gas station and promised to report the incident to the police immediately after, which was what he'd always assumed happened until he saw the pictures on the missing persons TV show. Detective Strieber and Kilgallen, who had custody of the case by then, went to work on the lead. Alan Smith's friends and family said he had indeed been talking about the incident he described since he returned from the Summer Jam concert. The detectives believed him, and they reopened the investigation. The river was trolled, the media was alerted, and the public was urged to think hard and try to remember anything at all that might be useful given this new information. The detectives were unable, however, to find any belongings or remains, which isn't surprising after 27 years. More reasonably, though, they had hoped for some good news from one of the county morgues along the river. Maybe they thought there might be some unidentified remains just waiting for us to put a name to them after all these years. But no such luck. Bonnie's mother took some solace in Smith's account. "I'm going to make closure with this," she said. But speaking on behalf of Mitchell's family, his sister Marion said, "I still have some lurking doubts." While police kept working the case and planning a polygraph test for Smith, among other things, a major world event intervened to take their focus away from the case again, in the form of the 9/11 terror attacks. The country was thrown into a national emergency. Detectives Strieber and Kilgallen were reassigned. The world was changed forever, and Mitchell and Bonnie's case was placed indefinitely on the back burner once again. The years wore on, and the Alan Smith drowning lead, that at once seemed so hot, had chilled to match the case itself. The attacks of September 11, 2001, somehow pushed every other case aside. The pivot point of history left personal tragedies in its wake, including Mitchell's and Bonnie's. As heartbreaking and at times horrifying as the starts and stops in the investigation were, the true tragedy laid in the hands of the families and friends. They kept the memory of Mitchell and Bonnie alight, even as their own lives moved through the stages of birthdays, careers, and other milestones. It's not just the passing of time, but the degradation of the story itself. Pictures fade, memories blur, people could be forgiven for giving up. By 2013, Sullivan County cold case detective Cyrus Barnes was the custodian of the file marked Mitchell Weiser and Bonnie Bickwit. The case had been cold for 4 decades when he took a call from a woman in Florida claiming to have important information. The call was surprising because there hadn't been any publicity or new developments in the case since the television story 13 years earlier. The information the woman wanted to share was vivid and disturbing. She believed her father had murdered Mitchell and Bonnie. What's more, she said she remembered meeting Mitchell in a diner with her father when she was 11 years old. Over the following weeks and months, the woman told Detective Barnes a lot of things about her father and the man he associated with when she was a child. As a result of her information, her father became an official person of interest in the case, and investigators brought excavation equipment to dig up the backyard of their former home in Wayne, just 20 minutes' drive from Watkins Glen, the site of the Summer Jam concert in 1973. Investigators decided they also wanted to dig up an area of vacant land behind the house, known locally as No Man's Land, so they knocked on neighbors' doors to apologize for the disturbance. One neighbor, Sarah Saunders, recalled that it made her shudder because a psychic had once asked her if she had any dead people buried around her house. Of course, it must be noted that the television psychic on the Missing Persons show in 2000 connected the name Wayne to the case also. Although the excavations in the town of Wayne failed to turn up any evidence, Detective Barnes did attempt to interview the woman's father in relation to the disappearance of Mitchell and Bonnie. Through his attorney, the man refused to be interviewed, and the detective lacked the evidence to compel him to do so. The father died in 2022. Imagine, holding a photo of someone you love, and to the world, it becomes a mere artifact, a representation of a bygone era. To those close to the missing, however, it remains an ember hot and capable of searing at the slightest breath of hope or grief. Those like Mitchell's sister Susan Weiser and Bonnie's sister Cheryl Kagan have been the ever-present guardians of their siblings' legacies, their narratives, and their unfinished stories. We'd need pages to trace every ripple, every eyewitness account, every dead end and every tentative step forward. From the psychic's predictions echoing through the pine-scented air of Camp Well Met during a TV crew visit to the Florida woman's chilling call to detectives in 2013, leads and theories abounded, each a glimmer of promise, each a fresh torrent of pain. Mitchell and Bonnie's parents have all passed away now, too, but their siblings and Mitchell's high school best friend Stuart, now in his late 60s, continue to carry the torch of memory in new and creative ways, including podcasting. The unfinished story of Mitchell and Bonnie epitomizes the relentless grip of unresolved mysteries. Each media mention, each shared post, each whispered rumor contributes to the power of remembrance, keeps the search relevant, and most vitally honors the memory of the missing. Media, with all its shades, creates a mosaic of our human experience, our tragedies, our search for truth. It is a tool, a weapon, a memorial, a nourishing force that not only revives cold cases from the brink of oblivion, but reminds us that even after 50 years, stories like Mitchell's and Bonnie's compel us to look to remember and to never stop searching. Don't ever let anyone make you feel ashamed for your interest in true crime. As of 2022, their file is in the hands of Sullivan County Detective Jack Harb. May he be the last and most successful of them all. For more about this and all of our episodes, Check out our True Crime Bedtime Stories Instagram and TikTok accounts. Join us next time for True Crime Bedtime Stories. Until then, sleep tight.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miro Board. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miro Board?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online at the same time.
Correct. Next. You need the team to act on feedback fast, so you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks instantly.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people running actually enjoyable and actionable retros in Miro. Get your first 3 boards free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.